You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay three nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Tires matter. They're the only part of your vehicle that touches the road. Tread confidently with new tires from Tire Rack. Whether you're looking for expert recommendations or know exactly what you want, Tire Rack makes it easy. Fast, free shipping, free road hazard protection, and convenient installation options. Go to TireRack.com to see tire test results, tire ratings, and consumer reviews, and be sure to check out all the special offers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Mike check, 1, 2. Ladies and gentlemen, ready or not, here comes another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we are talking with Ricky Brewley. Now, Ricky Brewley, he works over there at Vapor Trail. And if you guys don't know what Vapor Trail is, Vapor Trail is a rest company, and I believe they also own Stokerized. It's kind of like a brother-sister type company, Stokerized Stabilizers. And so that's where he works. But he also is the host of one of the hosts on the Range podcast right here on the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And today we have what is essentially a BS session about hunting gear and equipment. Now, over on Rick's podcast, he has something called the Shiny Objects series. And a lot of times within those conversations, we start to hear people talk about hunting gear and equipment, of what they would like, what they want to buy, what they have used in the past, likes, dislikes, things like that. And so in this episode, I talk with Rick about what some popular products are that his guests have discussed in the past. And we get into topics like arrow weight, tuning arrows, rests, sights. We cover a chunk of some of the most popular bows on the market, why they are, and some of the marketing that's used, along with if a company like Matthews changes its riser design, what does that mean for all of the other products that go on that riser, like sights and rests, right? They have to adapt as well. So if there's a change by a big manufacturer, bow manufacturer, all these other accessory companies have to do that as well. So with that said, lots of good conversation today on the Hunting Gear Podcast. Let's see here. Before we get into today's episode, do me a favor, go to iTunes or Spotify or wherever you are listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, leave a 5-star review and maybe write a comment or just let people know that you enjoy the Sportsman's Empire, the Nine Finger Chronicles, and the Hunting Gear Podcast. So there's that. Now, we do have to do Hunting Gear Podcast. We got to do some commercials. I'm going to kick it off with Code Blue Scent. Actually, I need a drink of water. I've been talking all day. There we go. Clear the throat. Code Blue Scent. Now, Code Blue Scent is known for their real and synthetic deer urines, some scent elimination products, They have sprays, they have laundry detergents, they have body washes, things like that. They sell tarsal glands. They sell something called a rope-a-dope system, which I am the most familiar with. And that's one thing. You pair it with a trail camera. You create a mock scrape with the rope-a-dope system. You use that blue rope that comes with it, preorbital gland scent. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to get a lot of pictures of deer. I can't tell you. Usually I like to check inventory with mineral sites, but one thing that I've noticed is that you can get a good inventory summer, spring, fall, winter with a mock scrape kit in a high deer density area. Like, these deer are coming to investigate it. They may not make a scrape, but they are going to come smell it and check it out. So go check out codebluescents.com. Do me a favor, enter the discount code NFC20 when you decide to make a purchase, and that's going to save you 20%, NFC20. So huge shout out to Code Blue Scents. Next is the Feed Hub. A spin cast feeder, that's what it is. If you use a spin cast feeder, whether it's for supplemental feeding, whether it's for baiting, or you live in a state that allows you to use feeders all year round, then you got to check out the Feed Hub. Now, what is the Feed Hub? It is a device that connects to a spin cast feeder, and it allows you to monitor your feed levels. It allows you to schedule feeding times, schedule unclogs, or you can remotely unclog through the Moultrie Mobile app. So if you guys are familiar with Moultrie Mobile trail cameras, then you use the same Moultrie Mobile platform to run your spin cast feeder. And so this is pretty cool, considering a lot of people don't hunt close to their hunting properties, or let's just say something happens to your spin cast feeder and it jams up. You get a notification on your Moultrie Mobile app. If you run out of feed for some reason, guess what? You now know remotely. There's no more guessing involved. Remotely, you can go and say, okay, well, I'm looking at this. I know I need more feed in this. And you can go. Then you can make your trips more efficient to your hunting properties. So go check out the Feed Hub on Moultrie Mobile's website, MoultrieMobile.com. So the Feed Hub, go check it out. Last brand new partner here on the Sportsman's Empire, the Hunting Gear Podcast, and the Nine Finger Chronicles Podcast is the Reveal Trail Camera, cellular trail camera by Tacticam. Now, just like all the other ones, right? It's very simple. Their setup is very simple. I don't have mine out in the field yet. They sent me a box of them. I have to go out and set them up. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you guys feedback here. I'm going to give you guys feedback on ease of use. I'm going to give you feedback on their digital platform, the app that you go and check through your phone or the website. And I'm going to let you guys know how they perform. So far, everything that I've heard about Reveal trail cameras is pretty sweet, dude. Like, from my understanding, trigger speed is very good. Their, the time it takes to deliver a picture is very good, and battery life is good, and they're affordable, which is good. And so now we have that. There's some new products coming from Reveal here very shortly that we're going to be talking about in July. And once the 4th of July is over, they're going to start ramping up some new product information. I'll have it here as well. But if you're looking for a cell cam, go check out Reveal by Tacticam. You can go to the Tacticam website. You can go to the Reveal website. I believe it's the same thing. And check out the new line, or their regular line of cell cams. That was a Freudian slip there, because I believe they're going to be having some new cameras coming very soon. So go check those out. Reveal by Tacticam. Other than that, ladies and gentlemen, those are the commercials. If you could do me a favor, just go to their websites, read up on the products, check them out, let them know that I sent you if you do decide to buy. And other than that, man, good vibes in, good vibes out. Let's get into today's episode. 3, 2, 1. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we are joined from Vapor Trail by Ricky Brule, and he is also the host of the Range Podcast that can be found on the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. Rick, my man, how are we doing?
Good, good. I'm doing fantastic. Just coming off of a 40-mile hike in the Black Hills, so a little sore, but
40 miles?
Yeah.
Now, did you do that for fun, or were you chasing something?
Just for fun. It's a part of another podcast that I do, and so it's about kind of challenging yourself and going on adventures. So,
oh, nice.
My business partner on that side, he does this every year, and so last year he did 6 peaks. This year we did 7 peaks in the Black Hills of South Dakota, and we did 40 miles, 8,000 vertical feet in 24 hours.
Jeez.
That's nuts.
I think I've told this story before, but my goal, and I better get on it soon because the older I get, the harder it's going to become, especially with my knees. My goal is to get to 14,000, go to Colorado, climb a couple 14,000s, 14ers. And so the time that I was out there to do it, this was several years ago, almost another lifetime ago. We got to about, I want to say 11 or no, we were at like 12.5, had quite a bit to go, but we could see the peak. Like we're walking up there, and all of a sudden, and this is the crazy thing about elevation, lightning struck below us. Like, whoa. It weaved its way through the mountains, and I was like, ah! But me and the guy we were with were like, dude, it's right there. I mean, it looked closer than it probably really was. And so these people, I'm guessing there was more experience from these people than, you know, some Iowa boy coming down the mountain. They're like, get off the mountain now, get off of it, go back to, drop down and then maybe try it again later today, but right now you got to go. And we looked at each other and we're like, well, let's see, maybe it's going to pass and
find a cave or something.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's just this like open face mountain. Right. And so we're hauling butt up there. My ass cheeks are burning so bad because we're trying to get up to this top before we die basically. But we weren't thinking about, hey, you still got to come back down. Well, we get, I'm guessing probably about 13. We get to about 13, and it just unleashes in hail. And it was like pea-sized hail, but it hailed so much that it accumulated about 4 inches, and it was stinging. Wow. It was starting to sting us. So me, my buddy, and some other random dude who was out there doing the same thing that we did had to hide underneath of a boulder on the downwind side and just stay out of it until this hail stopped. Lightning was cracking all around us, below us, above us. I've never really been in fear of my life, but that particular moment, I was saying prayers. I was like, dear Lord, just get me out of this one. Just get me out of this one.
Wow, man. That's wild.
Yeah. So, yeah, those types of adventures, man, they're fun. And it's something that I wish I would have done more in my youth and wish I could do more in this life.
Right. Right. And for us, you know, Midwest flatlanders, isn't it amazing how I'm always astounded by this in the mountains, how the weather can change on a dime.
On a dime.
Like, just like that. It's 1 minute it's absolutely beautiful and you're about to get sunburnt, and the next minute you're getting pelted with hail, right? That's crazy.
That's a fact. That's a fact. Yeah. Man, on your podcast, the reason you're on today, you have a series on the Range Podcast called Shiny Objects, right? Yep. And this is why you're on today. because some of these shiny objects that people talk about are pieces of hunting gear and equipment. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get you on today to talk about the average guy. Of all the people that you've had on your podcast and of all the people that have, you know, that have talked to you about their shiny objects, I like to hear about trends. I want to hear about what people are spending their money on. I want to hear about, you know, new fads or any type of pieces of equipment that are popular right now or maybe haven't been in the past that people are like, well, it's not popular now, but I still use it. Those types of conversations. And so when it comes mm-hmm. to your shiny objects conversations that you have, do you notice any trends or pieces of equipment that people tend to gravitate towards?
Well, sort of. I mean, it ebbs and flows with the seasons, right? And so with the podcast, we always try to kind of keep it relevant to the season that's going on. So, for example, the last, I think, 4 or 5 episodes that we did, with the exception of the one with Jason Matzinger, were all turkey hunting related. Mm-hmm. You know, just to try to be relevant in the time. Everybody's kind of psyched about turkey hunting, and that's what they want to do. So they're more inclined to listen to the podcast, I think, when it's related to what they're currently focused on.
Right.
And so I think that plays a role in that. Obviously, with us being an archery podcast, most of the gear we're talking about is archery equipment. So typically the bow is, you know, the centralized portion of the conversation.
Yeah.
And then accessories kind of fall into place from there. So, you know, it kind of depends. Obviously, our podcast is, our title sponsors are Vapor Trail and Stoker Eyes. So typically we focus a lot on those products as accessories. Of course, not everybody that we interview uses those products. So, but we don't typically get into the accessory side of things too often. It's mostly talking about the bows. We haven't really gotten too much into anything as far as, I haven't had anybody really talking about trail cameras or mm-hmm. any of that kind of stuff. We've had some conversations about saddle hunting. That's been becoming a lot more popular, so we've had a few discussions about that. But I would say mostly the conversation is around the bow and what's the new bow you're shooting or,
yeah.
you know, something like that.
Yeah. When it comes to archery equipment, do your guests have a favorite? Like Matthews, PSE, Bowtech, do you see trends of what the most popular brands are?
Well, Matthews is, if I went from a sales standpoint from our products, I would say Matthews is probably number one.
Yeah.
You know, as far as, you know, the latest and greatest AeroRest that we just, we came out with it a couple of years ago, but it's still been a hot seller. And mostly we designed that AeroRest around the Matthews bows. And then all the other companies have kind of followed suit with the mount. It's called the integrated mounting system on the bows. It's a rail that's on the front of the bow.
Yeah.
And so all these other companies have kind of fallen in line with that. And so, but yeah, I would say that's probably at the top right now. And then a lot of our, you know, a lot of our guests and some of the TV shows that we sponsor, we're really aligned with Prime.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the TV shows that we sponsor, they all run Prime. Jason Matzinger, Steve Eklund, Joe Appel from the Edge TV. You know, so a lot of those guys are running that. Plus we run Prime in our pro shop too. So we end up talking a lot about Prime bows as well. And, you know, PSEs, I shot a PSE Mach 34 last year. And we had several discussions with a few people. You know, I had a discussion with Ben Gatormson last year, and he's aligned with PSE, and he's been shooting their bows for a long time. So that's been a pretty popular one as well. So.
By the way, you just dropped a name of someone that he's not an influencer. He's not on a TV show. I don't think he's very active on social media anymore. But that Ben Gatormson dude, the dude is an absolute slayer of giant animals.
Mm-hmm.
Dude.
Yeah, he's getting at it. And I got to give him some credit here, too, where it's due, because a lot of what I know in archery is from him, because awesome. Him and I worked together at a Sportsman's Warehouse, and he taught me a lot. And
yeah.
I cut my teeth on you know, Western spot and stock hunting with him. Mm-hmm. Him and I hunted out in the Dakotas for like 7 years in a row. And so, so yes, we've known each other for a while, and yes, he is. And he's not into the spotlight. He doesn't really care about that. He just sees too much toxicity in the social media side of things. So he just tries to stay out of that. And, and he doesn't, you know, he wants to keep his trade secrets a secret.
Oh,
so
that's a fact. I don't blame him. I don't blame him. I wouldn't want people to know where I hunt, how I hunt. I mean, I've changed to, I'll be completely honest with you, man. I'm not posting the biggest trail camera picture, like the pictures that I get on trail camera of the biggest deer that I have on the farms anymore. I just don't do it, because I've had people reach out to me in the past where I've posted a picture of me holding a shed or me at a trailhead or something like that, even in the middle of nowhere. And they're like, hey, I think I know where that's at. And then they reach out to me and like, hey, is this place? And I'm like, okay, well, if one person's doing it, other people are doing it. And so
this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
I tend to not do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, Jason, actually, he talked about that in our episode. He was out shed hunting, and he said he was very careful about keeping all the sheds in his wall tent, you know, just to make sure that, you know, somebody didn't come along or, you know, get any ideas. Mm-hmm. And then later, before he left, he laid out all the sheds out in front of his wall tent, took a picture. A few days later, posted it on social media, and there had been a guy kind of milling around the area and had seen his wall tent, so he knew exactly what his setup looked like. So then now, at this point now, he knows that it was him that was there and what sheds he found in that area.
Yep.
So now he's like, shoot, I just kind of gave away a spot, you know. Yeah. So you gotta be careful with that, I guess.
When it comes to, let's stay with bows, right? In your opinion, what makes Matthews the top dog in the industry?
Dripping in gold? That's cool. Dripping in Velveeta's supremely creamy golden cheesiness? That's respect. Elevate your drip with Velveeta's range of outrageously delicious dips and dishes. Shells, cheese, melty blocks, and heat and eat queso that go all in on indulgence. Flex on your fam with a creamy, cheesy masterpiece and go all in on what you love with Velveeta. Respect the drip and satisfy your cravings. Bring home the drip with Velveeta.
Well, number of factors. I mean, I don't want to discredit the performance of their bows. They make a great bow, and I shot one a couple years ago, mostly because we were doing some R&D with the new AeroRest that we were going to launch. So that's why I used to shoot Matthews way back in the day, like over a decade ago, and then I've shot a lot of different manufacturers since. But so they make a great bow. One thing I will say, and especially here in the Midwest, I think it's, you know, because they're out of Wisconsin. And so because I think people really want to support a local brand.
Yeah.
So if you're a Midwest guy, a lot of people have a tendency to shoot that bow. And there's just so much of this is word of mouth too, right? So like if you got anybody who's looking to get into it and they're like, hey, what bow would you shoot? Matthews, you know, and then like if you were to ask anybody outside of the archery industry, they're not really, they don't spend a lot of time shooting a bow or anything like that. But if you were to ask them anything about, you know, what bow manufacturers do they know about, typically they're going to say Matthews, and they may have never heard of any other brand before.
Yeah,
we get that all the time. We get guys coming in the pro shop all the time, and they say, "Do you guys sell Matthews?" Which we don't, but and we would if we could. But I think it's marketing is they do a really good job of marketing their products. They put a lot of money into it. They're, you know, they've got a ton of different agencies working for them as well, so they've got a lot of really good tools in their tool belt in order to get their products out in front of people and getting them shooting their bows.
Yeah, that's a fact, man. Like, I think I've said this before on the podcast, but I think the marketing for Matthews is almost too good. To the point where I don't, like, for the longest time, I felt like I could not relate to Matthews marketing, right? And just being frank here, I felt that marketing made their, from this is only from my perspective, their marketing made their brand seem elite. And when I think of elite, I think of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like privileged almost. Right. Yeah. Does that make sense? Like, 'cause a lot of times these elite brands have other elite brands in their advertising. So if you look at a print ad of a Matthews bow, Sitka's in with that, right? And so now you have this elitism type of feel to some of that. And I looked at that a while ago and I was like, man, I just cannot relate to these brands. I've tried them, right? I've never actually bought or used. I've shot, but I've never bought or used a Matthews bow. I do have Sitka gear. I, in the past, I've used some Sitka gear. But even then, I bought it because I had a discount. I got a discount from them, okay? And so on some of these, some of this marketing, I just felt like it was connected to a style of hunting that I could not relate to. And and therefore, instead of wanting that, I said I had the, it had the opposite effect on me. Like, I can't relate to this, so I'm not going to use their product. So that was like, I don't know, subconsciously, that's how I thought. That's how I thought about it.
Yeah. And I think in some cases too, we kind of have a tendency, you know, like in your case, you know, you've got, there's groups of people, maybe I shouldn't group you with these people, but I'm just saying, because I've been in this boat too, where you kind of want to go outside the mold. A little bit, you know, and go, well, you know, because they do charge a premium price, right? Like, you can get a bow of similar ability for half the price.
Right.
Right. So you are, paying for some name there as well.
Yep.
And, you know, and like you were saying, these, a lot of these brands, they align with one another. And it's, again, it goes back to the marketing thing. You know, it's, it's really smart, you know, to do that kind of stuff. You know, and to your point, like, I've used Sitka gear since, I mean, probably 2006, I think was the first set of gear that I had, that I got. And I still have it.
Yeah.
The only reason I bought new gear is just different camel patterns. You know, I just started getting some different gear for different seasons, you know, as I could build up my, you know, build up my system a little bit. And I love it. You know, I mean, for, you know, there's a lot of guys that, you know, they kind of dog on it because it is expensive, without a doubt. Do you need to have it? No, you don't.
Right.
But I can say that I notice a difference in the gear. Yeah. And to your point, right, like, of course I work in the industry, so I get a little bit of a better price, but I could get a better price on Kuyu, I could get a better price on anything. But I just, it's what I've always used. It's always worked really well for me. And, you know, and so again, but going back to the bows in regards to Matthews, I guess I've kind of been a little, you know, I used to shoot a switchback way back in the day, single cam. And I wanted something that had more speed. I wanted something that was more efficient.
Yeah.
And so then I switched and I went over to Bowtech, and then I was shooting those. And I've never really gone back to Matthews other than when I was shooting the one for the R&D. And I really liked it, you know, moving on to that, you know, kind of binary type style system, you know, where you have a mirrored system is the way to go, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so again, they're making a great bow, but I think that people do kind of, some people have that tendency where it's just like, well, I'm not going to go with the mold. I want to try to find something that works.
Yep.
And not have to, you know, take out a mortgage on my house, you know?
Yeah.
So
kind of taking a backward step here, you know, you mentioned Vapor Trail designed an accessory, right? Their rest for specifically a Matthews bow. And that did that then create enough buzz within said industry that other bows started replicating that design in order to fit additional accessories on their bows? Did you see any of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when that integrated mounting system first came out, we kind of chuckled a little bit, you know, because it was like, well, I can't imagine that that's going to take over the, you know, the standard, you know, burger bowl style mount. Mm-hmm. And here we are, you know, probably, gosh, what's it been now? Six years now, or maybe a little bit more than that. And we are finding out that it is very possible that could get phased out. Mm-hmm. And for good reason. It mounts super quick, super clean. You know, all the manufacturers, you're starting to notice that they're starting to try to pull everything in to the center of the bow. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Matthews has the bridge lock technology where the stabilizer goes right into the riser. You've got all the sights that mount in the riser. Some manufacturers are putting a little Picatinny rail out on the front, and you can mount your sight to that. So it's taking all of your accessories from the outside of the bow and centralizing that weight a little bit. So now you don't have to worry about trying to offset that weight anymore.
Yeah.
And again, we've noticed this with accessories too, is that when that IMS came out and we didn't have, suddenly our arrow rest wouldn't fit on a Matthews bow, and our sales went like that.
So that's the impact.
Yep.
That's the impact that they have on accessories. Yep. So
absolutely.
That's crazy. You know, that's like, if you want to be a successful accessory company, you have to make your accessory fit on a Matthews bow, period.
Yep.
Period. Mm-hmm. Or you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's a huge, that is a huge footprint on the industry.
It is. And in some cases, you know, it kind of pigeonholes you too, in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, right from the beginning, when the integrated mounting system came out, when that was first designed, they had a strategic plan in how that was going to be released. And so essentially QAD, Quality Air Tree Designs, they have the patent, they hold the patents on that technology. Mm-hmm. And they, again, so there's a licensing agreement that bow manufacturers have to agree on with QAD in order to put that rail, in order to machine that on their bows. And so immediately when that technology came out, we reached out to QAD and we said, hey, we want to get on board. What do we got to do? And they said, well, we got a strategic plan here. You know, we'll let you know when something becomes available. And it was probably 2 or 3 years before we were given the green light on using that technology.
So are you guys currently licensing that patent?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
That so sucks. It's from a business standpoint, it sucks, but you have to do it to survive.
Yep.
Dang, dude. Mm-hmm. Well,
and again, it is a really slick system, you know, and so you can't argue with that.
Right.
And And it streamlines everything. Our arrow rest is lighter now. It mounts easier, you know. So there's all of those factors. But again, it's difficult when the biggest challenge is making a rest that will fit on every bow.
Yeah.
It's super challenging. And then we get a lot of guys that'll order one thinking they know what they need, and then they call and they say, oh, well, this isn't going to fit on my bow, you know, or they buy it because it's the latest and greatest, but don't realize that it's not going to fit on their bow from 2012 or 2011, you know. So then we got to, you know, and we've got other rests that can accommodate that. It's just we got to then swap them out. And
and
it's just a matter of getting information out there, you know. But it is interesting how you can make videos, you can put instructions on your website, you can do everything you can on social media, and not everybody's going to see it. So you still have to deal with those challenges. But
yeah, that's amazing in this world. You come up with an idea and you're the first to market with it, to the point where now you're on board with the major manufacturer of bows, and everybody else has to change their process because of you. And, you know, QAD, if they wanted more market share, they could have told you guys no, right? They could have told all these other companies, I'm sorry, tough shit.
They did. Right? They did for 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So, but it's also kind of cool. This is the one thing that I do love about this industry, and it's that we now have a relationship with QAD.
Yeah.
So we can be competitors, but we can also, because everybody knows competition is good, but at the same time, we can also, you know, we have conversations with them, you know, regularly, because every time we launch a new rest, you know, we got to, you know, send the design over for approval and just make sure that they look at it and everything is good. And so we have these conversations with, you know, some of the big dogs over there, and it's, you know, created a relationship. So that's a good thing for sure. And on top of that, now that we have the ability to fit on those bows, our sales are recovering. So,
well, that's good, man. That's good.
Yeah.
It's capitalism at its finest, right?
Yep.
I mean, to the hindrance of others at some point, but that's crazy. Now, kind of going back to bows here, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about Matthews. From your opinion, and maybe from some of the people that you've talked to, what we're taking Matthews out of the conversation now, from bow manufacturers, in your opinion, who are the next 2, 3, 4 manufacturers in the industry? Like, if you're going to pick, you know, here's the top 5. We've already established Matthews is probably number 1. What are the next 3 or 4 brands that are the cream of the crop when it comes to bows, compound bows?
I think there has been a little bit of a shift in the last couple of years. And I definitely would say, if we're talking top 5, and this is a little bit based on some of our sales too, just because, like, when I'm, you know, when I don't want to base it off of, you know, like social media or anything like that, you know, because the algorithm, like, everybody's got their own little social media world, right? So, but I would say, and these could be in any order, because they kind of bounce back and forth, but Bowtech is in there. Mm-hmm. PSE has done a phenomenal job in the last couple of years with their cam system, all of that. And again, with the marketing side of things, you know, bringing John Dudley into the fold, and they've got some influencers out there that are really pushing their products heavy. So PSE, and again, not to discredit them, they're making a great bow. I shot their Mach 34 last year. I loved it. Prime is really moving up the ranks quickly. It's hard to say whether they fall into the top 5 at this point in regards to sales, but they're ever present. I see they're making some really good moves, and I see them all over the place. So
yeah.
Prime is definitely working their way in there. And then, so what do we got? We got Matthews, Bowtech, PSE, Prime, and Hoyt.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's what I'd say. Now, I didn't go to ATA last year to shoot all of the bows like I have in previous years, where, you know, I go do my business stuff on one of the days, and then the other, you know, some of the other days that I'm there, I literally just shoot bows, right? And to get a feel for what is, you know, what's hot on the market. And I will say that the gap between the top five and the rest of the pack over the last 5 to 10 years is shortening, right? Now, I don't even know if some of these companies exist anymore, because, like you said, the social media presence, they may not have the budget to market like some of these other brands do. But, like, man, Martin Archery, the last bow that I shot from Martin Archery was pretty good. You know, obviously brands like Diamond, the spinoff of Bowtech was good. What's the manufacturer that started with A? Is there a bow manufacturer?
Oh, Athens.
Athens. Did they go out of business?
They did.
Yeah. And they had a good bow. And so they got out of business. It sounds like that was a rough exit for them out of the market.
Yeah. They pretty blatantly copied Bowtech's technology.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, Bowtech was going to take them to court, and they decided that they couldn't afford to do that. So they closed the doors. But they also have an accessories brand. So I think what they're doing is they're shifting everything over to that. I feel like maybe they just found a moment where it was like, you know, if we're gonna do this, we're gonna do this. So they shifted over. I can't remember the brand that they're of the accessories that they're running, but
yeah,
they do have that side of things. So.
Yeah, and then there's Bear Archery, right? Elite, like Elite is a really good bow. Elite Archery.
Yes.
Elite is a good bow. Are they top five? Mm-hmm. Some could argue that.
Yeah, like I said, they could, you know, they could be shifting in place and out of place. And again, like, my opinion is based on, you know, just like string sales and arrow rest sales that we have here at Vapor Trail. But yeah, Elite's pretty close. Darton has actually been making a really strong push. They've got a lot of pros on their side right now in the target scene, and so they're rising up in the ranks pretty quickly. So yeah, it's a tough one to decide. But yeah, and then I didn't even think about Bear.
Yeah.
And again, so that's part of the world that I live in on social media, right? I don't see a lot of it. It doesn't mean that they don't exist. Mm-hmm. It's still a very popular brand. They make a very good bow.
Yep, so. Absolutely. And I shot one of their bows a while ago. Man, what was it? The draw cycle, I wasn't a fan of, like a huge fan of. I could have gotten away with it, just like all these bows. But then at full draw, I felt very comfortable. Not very much hand shock and things like that. But Bear, like, I don't know. Bear has always kind of been there. I believe I shot a Bear bow like 20 plus years ago, 30 years ago. Like, it might have been my first bow I ever had. Bow I ever had. So, so those are the kind of the big dogs in the bow space. When it comes to the next product, a lot of people talk about on your show. What are some of the next products? Is it a spinoff of like archery, and is it actually accessories that go along with it, or is it other hunting products?
Well, we do some deep dives into arrows because you can go down a rabbit hole with arrows.
You can.
I mean, it is wild, you know. And then of course there's always the broadhead debate, which is always kind of a fun one.
Yep.
But you know, my personal opinion, you know, is they all work great.
Yep.
You know, especially if you put the arrow where it needs to go. Are there some that are going to be give you a little bit more forgiveness? Sure. I mean, if I threw a machete at a deer, it's probably going to do, you know, a pretty good job too, but as long as I hit it where it needs to go. But, you know, maybe I have a chance at hitting a you know, creating a little bit more hemorrhage by having a larger hole, you know, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, I would say we, you know, we get into arrows quite a bit. I'm actually just making a shift now. I've been shooting an Easton injection arrow, which they don't even make anymore. Been shooting that for quite some time. I made the shift over to G5's new Stax arrow. I haven't shot it yet. I've got a couple dozen here waiting to, I'm going to get those fletched up and get those ready for the Total Archery Challenge coming up. But
what's so special that's about those arrows? Why did you make that shift?
Well, again, trying to do something, look at something new. You know, I've shot Gold Tip, I've shot Easton, I've shot Victory, I've shot, let's see, what else? Carbon Express, there we go. Wow, yep. I don't know, I was struggling with that one so much. But so just like try something new, you know.
Yeah.
And they're new to the game. They just started making arrows, I think, 2 years ago. And so just having chats with a couple of people and saying they really like them. And so I thought I'd give them a whirl and we'll see how they do.
Yeah. And so it's the Mark series?
Yeah. So they make the Mark series, and now they have a new shaft called the Stax, STAX.
Okay.
Well, and it's, I don't think it's on their website, but if you search G5 Outdoors Stax, you'll find, there's some press releases.
Stack. Yeah. What's the deal with those? Like, what makes them special?
Well, you know, again, I don't know what really makes any arrow special over another. You know, yeah. I don't know. You know, there was a time where when I started shooting Gold Tip arrows, it was incredible how, you know, Tim Gillingham would do a demonstration at the ATA show where he would literally fold the arrow back around on itself and that thing wouldn't break.
Yeah.
Which is great, but also an unrealistic test. You can shoot that same arrow at a rock and it's going to explode. Right. So, you know, so is it a selling point? Does it prove that it could be a little bit stronger? Sure. But in all honesty, I guess I can't say what it is about this arrow that stands out over the others. It's a little bit smaller diameter and, you know, a little bit stiffer, but we'll, you know, just give them a try and see what they do.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, I mean, in a way, let me ask you this question. Would you have changed arrows if your old arrow was still being manufactured?
Probably. You know, I like to play around a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and part of the reason when I got the injections, I initially got two dozen of them.
Yeah.
And then I had a friend of mine who also had two dozen of them, the same shaft. And he had to make a switch because they weren't coming out of his bow, right? He was having a hard time shooting them. So then he was like, hey, do you want these? I'm like, sure. Same shaft I'm shooting. They were uncut, you know, they were unfletched, all that kind of stuff. So I took them. So now I have like four dozen of these things.
Yeah.
And I just never really, you know, I've never really had the time really to change anything or switch anything up or dive into any of the, you know, the rabbit holes that you can go down with arrows. And there's something about that that's really exciting, to play around with something new, try something different.
Yeah.
And so, honestly, the injection arrows are great, but also me being in the industry and, you know, I kind of want to have a pulse on all the different manufacturers, all the different things that are going on. So I'm getting back into, you know, trying out new things, you know, and if they work great, obviously I'll shoot them for the long haul.
Yeah. Man, that's one thing that I wish I had time to do, is to tinker. Like, mm-hmm. whether that's arrow builds, messing around with, you know, fletching designs and shapes and so I kind of just go with what I've been, you know, if I change something up, it's usually total arrow weight. That's it.
Yeah.
Not a huge, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not that guy who is going to put a lot of, energy into making sure there is a certain FOC on an arrow. Like, I'm more of a total arrow weight guy. Just like, make it heavy, make it fast, and the broadhead's going to do its job. Right. So I might change up the broadhead from a mechanical to a fixed, depending on the animal that I'm hunting and what I feel like my range is going to be at that time. Mm-hmm. But the arrow isn't, it's either going to get lighter or it's going to get heavier.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I mess around right now, because that's all I do. And that's all I have time for. The other thing is like, if I'm going to go on an elk hunt, I'm going to set up my arrow for an elk hunt, and then I bring that back to Iowa and I use that same arrow on whitetails, strictly because I don't have time to come up with two sets of arrows, practice two sets, you know what I'm getting at. And so I don't have time to tinker anymore. Although I would love to. I would love to have a press here in my office and set up my bow, make my own arrows, cut my arrows, do everything right and have that knowledge. I just haven't, I've never made that a priority because I have so much else going on.
Right. And that's proof that you don't have to put too much thought into it. Honestly. I mean, you can, depending on the situation and what you're planning on doing, I would say a majority of bow hunters, probably whitetail hunters, sitting in a tree stand, max range. I mean, I would say 10 years ago, max range was probably 30 to 40. Maybe now it's like 40 to 50.
Yeah.
Because I think people are getting a little bit more open to taking longer range shots with the technology that we have. But, and that's part of the reason why I haven't had too much, focus on the deep dives of my arrows, because I haven't been going out west. I haven't been doing any of that kind of stuff. Just been, shooting here in the Midwest, hunting whitetails. And, I don't think you got to really get too complicated. You could literally go buy a six pack of arrows off the shelf that are pre-fletched, throw 100 grain broadhead on there. And, obviously as long as you're practicing with those and they're shooting well for you, you're in good shape, and when it comes to like going out west, maybe wanting to take some longer shots, that kind of thing. And that's when you kind of need to take a little bit of a deep dive into making an arrow that's as forgiving as possible, because you have so many more factors. You've got wind, you've got rain, you've got all that kind of stuff that you got to think about.
Reaction time, things like that.
But like with your setup, it's smart to just set it up for elk. And you could do something as simple as have a 125 grain broadhead for your elk and then come back to the Midwest and put a 100 grain broadhead on, or keep the 125 on there if you want. It'd be just that simple.
Yeah.
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink, then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
Like, but I don't know what your style is, but I don't like to just, this is going to sound awful, but I don't like to just kill the animal. I like to destroy it. You know what I mean? Like, I want my arrow to just whoom, not only hit it, but pass through it and leave giant blood trails. All right. That may sound, I don't know, like creepy, but I can tell you the first doe that I shot, man, in 2010 I hit a 200 inch giant whitetail, and it hit bone, right? I didn't get a lot of penetration on it, and I was like, man, I think my arrow's too light, right? So that made me change my setup. That poor, the next the next year when I switched my setup to a much heavier arrow. We're talking, I believe back then it was high 400s, 490s, maybe even just tip creeping into the 500s. And that doe, I shot at 20 yards, a complete broadside. I think she might have even been quartering, maybe she was quartering away just a hair. And I hit her with this new heavy arrow, and I right through the broadside, the boiler room, into the opposite side shoulder. I knocked her down on her side. She got back up, struggled, and fell over. Toast. I mean, I absolutely toasted her. And I was like, that's what I want every time now. That's what I want every time. And so I've always, and so from that point, you learn what you can get away with as far as penetration at certain distances and things like that. So if a deer's at 10 yards, I'm taking a frontal shot for the most part, right? I'm not taking straight on away shots, but I'm taking quartering shots towards, away, whatever, because now I know my setup at closer range. Now, if it's at 30 yards or beyond, I'm not taking a frontal shot. I'm not taking hard quartering shots. I'm taking complete broadside shots because I know that my arrow at that distance is going to lose something. What it is, I don't know. It's going to lose, it's going to lose something. And when that broadhead, especially in a whitetail, I shoot expandables, there is energy loss with that deployment of that broadhead. How much, I don't know. I just know that all of this experience that I've had now has led me to more success at the end of blood trails with a crowbar, basically, with a with a broadhead on it.
That, you know, it stems up another really heavy duty debate in the archery space, and that is, you know, arrow weight. And over the last few years, arrows have gotten really, really, really heavy. When you're talking 490 pushing 500s, that I relatively speaking, that's a heavier arrow, but we I know guys that are like 600, maybe more. And you know, it gets to a point where if you understand kinetic energy and you understand the formula that goes in, into what kinetic energy is, because that's ultimately what you need. That's the number that you're looking at to understand how well can that arrow penetrate. And the kinetic energy formula includes both speed and weight. So there's a happy medium there. As you get, as your arrow gets heavier, now your arrow starts to slow down. And so you have to find that, you know, you do get to a point where your arrow is going to be so heavy that it's slowing the arrow down, that you're actually decreasing your kinetic energy at a certain distance. So, I mean, we could, you know, again, this is another rabbit hole we could go down, but, you know, and so I've got a buddy out here in Minnesota, he shoots a 600 grain arrow, but he's not shooting, you know, he's shooting maybe 20, 30 yards at the most. Is it necessary to have an arrow that heavy? No, absolutely not. It's just what he's comfortable with. And that's okay. That's fine. You know, but you'll get people that'll be like, oh, that's stupid. Why would you do that? You know, and hey man, you do you, you know, but you know, then there's also, you can kind of go the other way too, where it's like, well, if I shoot a lighter arrow, now I'm going to get more speed. So the advantage that you have with that is you got a flyer, or a flatter flying arrow. So when you're shooting distance, you have a little bit more forgiveness in how you can judge that yardage, if that makes sense. And, but this is one thing that is going back to Ben. This is one thing that Ben always told me too. And he's like, it's great to shoot a light arrow and shoot a, and shoot really fast. There's some guys that just want to shoot as fast as they can, right? And, but he was like, you got to think about the oscillation of the arrow. And you're gonna, actually going to get less penetration if your arrow is, you know, basically, this is the best way that I can think about it, is like trying to get a wet noodle through a deer, as opposed to like a straight, you know, stiffer shaft. So there's that factor to think about too, you know. So there's all those different, things, you know. And typically, if you're shooting longer distance, your arrow is, you know, a lot of the oscillation is out of it by that point, and so you don't have to worry about it. But just those are things that you just, that, you know, things that you got to kind of think about. But Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, a little bit of heavier weight is typically going to give you more kinetic energy. It's going to give you better penetrating power because you're going to have less oscillation in the arrow.
Right.
But you can go overboard.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is a lot of that depends on what your draw weight is, what your draw length is, right? So if I was only shooting 25 inches of draw length, then my arrow, I would not have a heavier arrow like that. It'd be lighter because I'd need to get it going faster. But I shoot 30 inches at 70 pounds, and dude, that arrow at, you know, at 500, I think my arrow right now is 524 grains, and that arrow is still flying with that, right? So so the conversation of total arrow weight needs to have an asterisk by it, in my opinion. And that asterisk is, what is your draw weight? What is your draw length? Because I feel that overboard on a 25 inch draw at 60 pounds would be, you know, 524 grains is overkill. That's too much, as opposed to, you know, 70 pounds at 30 inches. That's right in the sweet spot, I think, for me anyway. And so a lot of it depends on what other factors go into what makes that arrow fly.
Yep.
So
yeah, and to your point, you know, if you're shooting a 500 grain arrow at 25 inch draw length, that arrow is going to be probably too stiff. And so the issue you're going to run into there is tuning. So you may have a tough time. That bow may not be shooting that arrow at its most, it may not be shooting that arrow most efficiently.
Yeah.
And so you may struggle to get it to group well, or, you know, you may have to compensate by having your arrow rest shifted, you know, out of center shot in order to get, like, say a proper paper tune.
Yep.
And all those kinds of things. And again, that's another debate too. You know, so many people get hung up on paper tuning, and for me, ultimately it's how are your arrows grouping downrange.
Yeah.
And your paper tuning is just a starting point. It doesn't necessarily, it's not the gospel as far as how well your bow is tuned.
Yeah. 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 And there's a, you know, are you a four fletch guy or a three fletch guy?
Three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Three.
I've heard, ever since I started hunting the West, specifically out in flat, open, windy country, I went to a four fletch just for stabilization. I'm pretty sure that is overkill, that four fletch, from everything that I've been reading. But when I mean overkill, I mean it's creating unnecessary drag for balance. It's balancing the bow. The fletchings are doing their job, but it's more than what I probably need, but it doesn't hurt, if that makes sense. That's my assumption. And so I've went to four fletch just to create a stable arrow as quickly as possible flying through the air, which maybe I'm wrong on this. Stable arrow, quicker out of the bow, means more accuracy downrange. That's what my thought process is.
Typically, yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that's another one too. You know, I think that if you're shooting like a four blade broadhead, I think it makes sense to shoot four fletchings. To your point, it doesn't mean that you can't shoot a three blade with a four fletch.
Yep.
And a four fletch is going to give you probably quicker stabilization coming out of the bow. To your point, you're probably going to get a little bit more drag, maybe slow down a little bit, or you're going to get a little bit more drifting out of it. And one thing my buddy Frank does is he does a four fletch, but he will shoot a lower profile vane. So he's getting that faster stabilization, but he's getting less wind drift side to side because it's a lower profile.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, that's one of those things, right, where it's just it's more about kind of the confidence in your equipment and also just playing around with stuff, you know, like with these new arrows I have, I'm going to, you know, I'll probably build two or three different arrows I'll have different weights, I'll have different fletchings, and I'll shoot them all and then see which one I like the best, and then I'll then follow suit on the rest of it, on the rest of the shafts.
Right. And so when I mess around with my arrow, it is for one reason only, that's Western hunts. Because I know that where I hunt and how I hunt here in Iowa, in Kansas, in any other state, Midwestern state where I'm from a tree stand, I'm in thick, nasty cover, and that cover is going to dictate my range. Therefore, it doesn't mean like four fletch. Why do I need four fletches when I'm shooting 30 yards or inside or 20 yards, right? Or even closer to that. Why do I need a 524 grain arrow at 20 yards? I probably don't. You know, why do I need all this stuff? It's because like I'm building it for everything else, not for my Midwestern tree stand hunts. It's for my mule deer hunts. It's for my elk hunts. So, and then I just bring that back and destroy what I hit at 15 yards, at 20 yards. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So,
speaking of that, are you going to do any Western hunting? Did you draw any tags?
Yeah. So South Dakota mule deer is what I've done. I'm stacking points in Wyoming right now. And I'm waiting
for elk,
deer, antelope. Okay. I probably don't need any more preference points for antelope and deer, but I'm sitting on 8, I believe, right now for elk and antelope. And so I'm just gonna, until the time is right, I drew South Dakota this year. I drew Kansas this year. So I'm going to be in a deer. I've been deer heavy for the last 7 years, I believe, is the last time. I mean, how long? It's been probably 5 years since I've been on an elk hunt. And so the next time I go on an elk hunt, if it's not Colorado over the counter, it's going to be a big hunt, an important big elk hunt in Wyoming, and to the point where I'm going to be spending, those are what, $80 a pop for a preference point. And then the tag itself, whenever I do decide to draw Wyoming, is going to, I think it's $1,200 now for a non-resident.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So I am going to, it's going to be a big hunt, not only from the time it's taken me to acquire those preference points, but from the financial standpoint as well. And it could potentially be a once in a lifetime hunt for me. And I want to do it right. I want to do it big. I want to put myself in the best possible position to kill an elk that I would, I'm not looking at anything like a 400 inch bull, right? I'm looking at something that is potentially mountable, right? Something where I could get a shoulder mount on my wall. If not, no big deal, because it's so rare for me to get out there and hunt that species, it'd be cool to run into a 300 inch bull, right?
Yeah,
it would be cool.
Sure.
So I want to put myself into a position where I have that opportunity. Does that mean an outfitter? I don't know. Does that mean a guide? I don't know. Does that mean, spending two straight weeks out there? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. See when the time comes.
Yep. How about you?
I drew North Dakota and that's it. I just did points across the board. I only have so much time to get out. And so I like to just take a full week. And so then, in all fairness, then I'll take some time off too. So then I can be with the kids and then my wife can go do her thing.
Yep.
And so, so I'm just going to spend probably a week out in North Dakota. I've got a camera guy that's going to come out and film it. We're going to try to make a film.
Oh, nice.
And I'll be out there with a good buddy of mine that I've been wanting to hunt with for a long time. I've got some ground that I'm very familiar with out there, but I think he's got some other spots that we're going to go to and check out.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how it goes. I know the numbers are down, and so I'm a little bit worried about that, but I did draw my bear tag in Minnesota as well, which is typically like a 4 to 5 year draw, and I drew it in two. But this is also a very remote area of the state that I've hunted before. But I'm going to probably forego that tag. The only reason I applied was just in case I didn't get North Dakota. So because I got North Dakota, I'll just take the preference point in Minnesota this year and then probably do Bear next year. Yeah. And then I've been applying for points in Colorado for 7 years now, so I've got a ton of elk points. I've got antelope, mule deer. This year I applied for moose and bighorn sheep. And, yeah, of course, that's 100% draw on the points, so I did pretty good there. But
yeah.
But that's it. Yeah. Oh, and then, I do points in Wyoming for elk as well. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, one of these days I'll cash in, man, hopefully before my knees explode and I can't even carry any weight on my back anymore. So So I got to figure that out. But I tell you what, Ricky, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with us. For those of you who haven't listened to the Range podcast here on the Sportsman's Empire, you got to go give it a listen. Him and his buddy Hollywood are doing really good things over there. So go check it out. And again, Ricky, man, appreciate your time.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.